Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. I just want to apologize to you guys for the technical difficulties we've been having over the last couple of weeks. We missed an episode 2 weeks ago because I had this amazing conversation with my buddy Liam, and for whatever reason, the file didn't save. It was really upsetting. We managed to go back and do it again. And then when my podcast editor released the latest episode, for some reason, it chopped off the last 10 minutes of the show. Anyway, it's all been fixed now, and I'm really hoping it's not going to happen again in subsequent episodes. This week, we have a good friend of mine. I don't know why I always say that, a good friend of mine, because it's almost always a good friend that I have on the show. But he really is a fantastic human being, David Riley. And the thing I respect most about him is that he's just someone with his shit together. You know, a lot of the jiu-jitsu guys who've chosen to make it a career for themselves, it's kind of like they put so much focus and passion into jiu-jitsu and into what they're doing that they don't really attend to the other important things like the relationships or the business aspects or even sometimes their health. And David is not that guy. He's really got everything firing on all cylinders, and I really admire and respect him. And I think he's got some cool stuff to share with us all. So here's episode 8 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. Enjoy. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast. Episode 8 finds me chatting to a very cool guy, very, very cool guy, someone I admire in many ways. He seems to have carved out a real cool lifestyle for himself from within the Jiu-Jitsu industry. He's based out in the desert in Arizona, which is a place I think I might be spending some time in the near future. His name is David Riley, and he runs Undisputed, fantastic gym out in Tucson. David, I'm so happy to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm super stoked to be here. Thanks for having me on.
For sure. But one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on as a guest is, I mean, obviously you're a cool guy, and I know we're going to speak about a lot of cool stuff, but practically, I think the way that you can help our listeners more than in the biggest way is to just describe how you have managed to run such a successful Jiu-Jitsu Academy. But we'll get into that in a short while. Before we do that, could you just give me a bit of a background about how you started training in Jiu-Jitsu and how you came to be at this point?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I think if you would have asked me 15, 16 years ago when I first started doing Jiu-Jitsu that eventually I saw myself doing it as a career, I probably would have laughed, you know, in your face. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially back then, I started in about 2000, year 2000. And where I lived in Kentucky at the point, jiu-jitsu was definitely not common or popular at all. I was actually going into my junior year of college at the University of Kentucky. And I was just, you know, like most college students back then, flat broke. I mean, you know, not, you know, two pennies to rub together even would have been an awesome day. So I found this was just a regular gym, and it was called the Lexington Athletic Club. It was a nice gym for the area, and I couldn't afford a gym membership there, but they had, it was a nice gym, so they had a towel service as part of the membership program. And if you would fold towels 3 hours a week, you would get a free gym membership. And so at that point, my time wasn't worth much at all. So I was all 100% in. And it just happened to be that another one of the guys working there with me doing the exact same thing, I was involved in jiu-jitsu. And so it was just a random conversation one day. We were both up there getting ready. He was taking over the shift for me. He was like, "Hey man, have you ever heard of jiu-jitsu?" And when I was a kid, I did a little bit of Japanese jiu-jitsu, and I stress little bit. I think I made it to like yellow belt at best. And you know, like a lot of kids, I just lost focus, attention, and was gone to something else. So I had no idea, you know, the major differences between Japanese jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, what it entailed. But when he mentioned that, I think you'd really like it. You know, I'd always loved physical sports like hockey, football, that kind of stuff. And so it seemed like something that was right up my alley. and the guy just got his purple belt from Carlson Gracie Jr., and he was one of the few purple belts in the state of Kentucky back then. And so I started going in and just doing a little bit of training with him. And man, I just, one of those things where, you know how you just, it was like a duck to water. I was like, man, I actually loved how challenging it was. I mean, you know, as an instructor, I think sometimes we forget what it was like to have your very first day, or at least I know I do. And looking back at that, I remember walking in, you know, was moderately athletic and strong. And I remember looking around the room and thinking, oh man, I better go easy on these guys, you know? Like just thinking, I mean, you know, almost, it sounds almost narcissistic now when you think about it, but man, I remember thinking that, like, God, I think I might really hurt these guys if I go too hard, I should go light. And, you know, like everybody else's story, inside of moments, I recognized, you know, how unbelievably different jiu-jitsu is and was when it comes to just controlling someone. You know, I felt like a true fish out of water, and it was hard, and it was humbling, and it was just one of those things that I knew that I had to figure out how to at least become proficient in this. You know, and I remember setting goals back then, like this guy I trained with was a purple belt. I remember thinking, man, if I could just get a purple belt, I'll be like absolutely an unstoppable killing machine. You know,
yeah.
And bit by bit, it just, you know, the more I learned, the more I recognized that I had so much more to learn, and ongoing all the way through to where we're at now.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I love the way you tell that story, because I'm sure there's a lot of black belts out there that have tried a similar path. You know, again, like I really want to get into the business dynamics of jiu-jitsu, because I think you, more than anyone else I know actually, has a lot of expertise in that subject. So it's my understanding you worked with Gameness at one point, is that correct?
That is correct. When I, it was about 2002 or so, I ended up stopping the folding towel position, thank God. There was a spot that opened up in the sales department at the gym that I was working at. And so I took that job and did well with it. And so within a relatively short period of time, I got a promotion that moved me to Nashville, Tennessee. And so they had a gym there, and I was in Nashville. And that's when I came in contact with Sean Hammonds, who I'm still to this day, you know, part of and under. And Sean was teaching full-time at the Nashville Mixed Martial Arts Academy, which happened to be the home for Gameness as well. And so when I came in contact with Sean and started training with him, the folks that owned Gameness at the time really wanted to kind of bring me over and start having me do a little bit of sales and stuff like that with Gameness and the Nashville Mixed Martial Arts Academy as well. And so it was a bit of a leap for me at the time, because I was leaving a pretty stable company that was relatively large at least, and, you know, jumping into a company that at the time was very, 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 very new, like the early 2000s. But I really loved the tenacity and drive among the owners there. They were just so ambitious, and they had just lofty goals that at the time I didn't even know, couldn't fathom were possible. And so I loved that aspect of getting a chance to be a part of something that was small and getting to make it theoretically really, really large.
Mm-hmm. I understand. And it's my understanding you did quite a lot of good work at Gameness, and then you guys kind of went your own separate ways, and that's when you created, or you bought your first gym, is that correct?
Yeah, in a nutshell. So I ended up leaving that, and it was a great experience, learned a ton. And I actually moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and I worked back with that large company again for a little while, managing a really large 55,000 square foot facility in Louisville, Kentucky. You know, had thousands and thousands and thousands of members, large staff. And so I got an opportunity at a relatively young age to get basically the entire spectrum of what is the fitness industry. So operating a club, whether it be a jiu-jitsu gym, a regular gym, whatever it might be, but getting a chance to see from the very, very ground floor, so starting just cleaning equipment, all the way through sales, sales management, even personal training, into eventually general management. And so it was, you know, it was an education, so to speak, that you can't buy at a college or university, because it was all applicable and practical.
Mm-hmm. I understand. So you learned in the trenches, basically, which is probably the best way to do it. I mean, it's the best way to do it in jiu-jitsu as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Baptism by fire.
You know, I knew that, and I was always very open and honest with my employer, that at some point I wanted to absolutely be an entrepreneur. I wanted to be on the ownership side, and that was my goal. You know, you and I have talked about this, and there's tons of great reading material out there about the differences among people and what makes you an entrepreneur, what makes you an employee, etc. And I just, the thought of being an employee is so scary to me. Like, it's so foreign. You know, I think when somebody isn't an entrepreneur, they often will say that about being an entrepreneur. They're like, oh, well, aren't you scared? Because, you know, man, you're the one that the buck stops with you. And I mean, that, to me, the flip side is so scary. Somebody else in control of my paycheck, of you know, me having to run something by them. And so I knew that's what I wanted to do, but I knew that financially speaking, I was not in a place where I could either start my own thing or even purchase something. So everything to me, I began a goal with a financial end and a timeline end. And I wanted to have a certain amount of money by a certain amount of time, because that's when I was ready to sign off and either start something or buy something. And so, fortunate enough to get into the foreclosed real estate market right when it crashed. So
I scrounged
together a little over $3,000 and got a down payment and bought my first foreclosed property. And
for $3,000 US dollars.
Correct. It was $3,500, which was at the time, it was FHA loan. It was literally the least amount of money you could possibly put down on a piece of property. And got a great deal on a foreclosure, was able to put minimal money into it, and inside of about a year was able to flip it, and then repeated that process two separate times, and was able to meet that financial goal, you know, which at the end of the day, once I hit it, I was like, all right, I know that I'm ready now to get out and do something. And so it was by almost just happenstance that I heard about Undisputed in Arizona.
Okay, so just for a little bit of background for the many, many listeners who haven't made it out to Arizona or Undisputed, it's a great gym. You know, I'd say I've probably been to about 300 jiu-jitsu gyms at this point, maybe even more. And I'd say 2 out of 10, or 1 out of 5, is run professionally and run as a business. Undisputed is definitely one of them. And the question I want to ask you, David, is what do you think are the main differentiating factors between, I guess you could say, fitness facilities in general, but specifically for our audience, for those guys who might have already started an academy, or those who might be wanting to open an academy? What do you think are the differentiating factors between successful academies and unsuccessful academies?
It's such an awesome question, and one that truly I get asked all the time. And if we were to kind of boil it down, and let's make it as simplistic as possible, I mean, I think it goes without saying that people can appreciate that hard work has got to be one of those tenets. But I almost hate it when people say that, like, oh, what's the difference? Well, hard work. Well, sure. I mean, you know, but what does that really translate to? I mean, I hope everyone knows that no matter what you're doing, if you want it to be truly successful, it's going to require a lot of hard work. I mean, so that kind of goes without saying. But if we were to stretch that out, the ability to systematically operate everything and systematically be able to convert things. So convert potential leads into actual living, breathing clients. So often when we talk about, and whether, honestly, it really doesn't matter to me whether it's the regular gym business, if it's the jiu-jitsu industry, or if it's truthfully any small business, right? I mean, the model that I operate under I want to do everything I can to create the absolute best service that I possibly can. So, you know, you can't bow to that adage that you can just dump a bunch of money into advertising or marketing, generate a bunch of leads, close a bunch of sales, throw a bunch of people in a room and assume that you're going to have a thriving business. I mean, that is honestly one of the worst things you can do. I think, you know, one of the biggest questions I get asked all the time is, so, hey, what do you guys do for marketing? And, you know, honestly, man, I hate that question. I really do. I hate that question because I promise you, 80% of the time, at least, it's the wrong question. So when somebody asks me that, right, what do you guys do for marketing? Oh, man, I'm going to have to spend time with you to figure out if that's even the right question you should be asking me.
Yeah, and I would say the correct question is, what do you do to provide value?
Right. What is it that you're doing that makes your gym successful? You know, if you were to make it just kind of boil it down to that. And so, awesome service, do everything you can. Legitimately care about the people that are coming in that you're servicing. And again, I know you think, well, yeah, I mean, of course, but no, I mean, legitimately care about them and care about the service you're providing them. You know, make sure that it is professional and that it's done systematically. And then you've been able to do that. Now let's talk about ways that we can systematically convert potential clients into living, breathing, actual clients. And so I say that because it's one thing to be able to create an effective message, send it out there. It generates a bunch of leads that either call, email, or walk in to your business. But then being able to take those potential group of leads and put them into a system so that there is a systematic conversion process that goes from start to finish. And then once they're actually members, well, how do we systematically make sure so that something you can do repetitively over and over again, and it's measurable, how do we systematically make sure that we're retaining those members as effective as we possibly can? And so, you know, we have a set group of things that we do every single day, every single week, and every single month to try to make sure that we're maximizing all those numbers.
Well, I mean, David, that advice is just gold. And there's a couple of guys I've met on my tours. If they had known that at the start of their journey into opening a jiu-jitsu gym, they would be a lot less stressed and a lot less enjoying their jiu-jitsu a lot more, as opposed to struggling and making like a grand a month or whatever it is. You know, they'd be able to focus on providing good service because all the systems and the business aspects would be firing properly. Let's change to a slightly different topic. This one's a little bit more controversial, but I think perhaps just as important for the jiu-jitsu community. It's something I put out an article on Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood about 2 or 3 years ago about performance enhancing drugs and jiu-jitsu, and I have never received as much of a backlash and as much negative feedback. And the funny thing is, I wasn't even endorsing these things. I was literally just giving my honest opinion and also explaining how I'd used some of them in the past and just explaining my experience. I was trying to give it a subjective account of my own experience. And again, I wasn't saying you should do steroids or you should do growth hormone or you should do testosterone. I was just saying this is what these things can do to you, both positive and negative. And goddamn, the amount of negative feedback that came out of that, I found quite disheartening, because to me it indicated a lack of open-mindedness and in many cases a lack of intelligence and a lack of the ability to think critically. So coming back to why you're an interesting part of this discussion, when I met you, you know, we trained a couple of times, and I thought you were a good jiu-jitsu player, and you very athletic, very dynamic. And I was shocked to discover that you were the same age as me. And I was at the point where, I don't want to call it a tipping point, because I really do believe that in every day and in every way, I'm becoming better and better through focused training and nutrition and yoga and things like that. But there definitely comes a point in your mid-30s where your body changes. And it's not the same as it used to be. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So I was just quite interested to find out that you were the same age as me, but you were very, very muscular, very ripped, just had a strong sense of vitality about you. And, you know, I called you on it because I was just interested. I said, well, are you taking anything? And you were one of the first people, you were one of the first people who was ever straight up honest with me and just said, yes, I'm prescribed testosterone replacement therapy by a doctor. And I respected you. My respect for you increased so much because there are so many people, even world champions and high-level jiu-jitsu guys, who they won't admit to that. You know, for some reason, they're just like, I mean, obviously, I get the reason. It's because it's illegal. In most instances, unless you have a doctor's prescription, it's illegal. But I really admire that you just said, yeah, like I had low testosterone and the doctor prescribed it for me and like it brought my levels back up to optimum. And could you just tell me a little bit more about that process and what it's done for you and what it's taken from you and the side effects and why you continue to do it and how you justify, like, just, I just love your opinion on this. And again, there's no judgments from my side. And I like to consider the people, the audience listening to this show are pretty intelligent and pretty open-minded as well. So you don't need to worry about offending anyone. And for anyone who hears this and gets offended and just wants to start a moral crusade, please tune into a different show. We don't need you here.
Yeah, you know, and absolutely. You know, when it comes to something that is wrong with my body, and fortunate enough, we've had fantastic medical advancement, you know, when there's something that's legitimately wrong with my body, and I know that there's a solution out there, I mean, almost any medicine is going to come with some inherent side effects. And I think that we're always going to be in a constant state of risk versus reward, right? And so when it came to the testosterone replacement therapy, a question for myself, you know, once I weighed the potential positives with the potential negatives, for me personally, it was a no-brainer. I mean, I really didn't even have to give it too much thought. Because in truth, I looked at other things that I had taken, medicinally speaking, and had even way worse adverse side effects that could come with them. And so, you know, it was about, what, 2-3 years ago, give or take, I want to say, yeah, that I really started noticing a very big difference in my recovery time, my libido, my overall mental well-being. And it's one thing, you know, I recognize that there can be different things to depression, there can be different things that might cause fatigue, etc. And so instead of just feeling that way, I wanted to be proactive about it. And so I went and spoke with a physician, and a physician in the area that deals primarily with men and with the notion of testosterone. And I was really fortunate to find a very, very great, credible, knowledgeable place that in truth refuses treatment if you truly don't need it, which I think is honestly an important component to the notion of testosterone replacement therapy as a mechanism to help you operate at a normal level, right? And I mean normal level, right? I get the fact of saying, well, if you take a whole lot, you'll perhaps operate way above that norm. But I liked the fact that they regulate everything. And so when they tested my testosterone levels, they actually tested everything. They found that it wasn't just my testosterone that was extremely low, but it was my hormones across the board. And so we actually found that there were some issues with my pituitary gland at the time. And fixing those issues was far safer than attempting to go in and theoretically operate to make a change. And so adding the element of testosterone for me was the absolute best course of action, and regulating it at a credible place so that if my testosterone levels rose above a certain threshold, that they would reduce the amount of testosterone I would be taking. so that it kept me operating at a safe, optimal level. And honestly, when it comes to the side effects, so to speak, in truth, for me, there legitimately were no negative side effects that I experienced. I didn't experience any of the extreme acne. I didn't experience intense mood swings. I didn't experience anything except for a better recovery time and an overall, just honestly, a sense of better mental well-being.
Well, that's such a powerful testimony. A bunch of friends and I we had a barbecue the other night, and afterwards we were all sitting around this big dinner table, and we somehow got on the subject of Sylvester Stallone, who was an example I used in that performance enhancing drug article on Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood. And we pulled up a YouTube video which goes through it's just pictures of him, a loop of pictures of him as he's aging. And in the bottom left corner, there's a counter showing his age. So I think it starts off at like 7 or 8 as he's a kid, and then keeps moving through his Hollywood career. And anyway, it gets to age 66, and there's a picture of him in, I can't remember which movie it was, but he's shirtless. And he is a specimen. The guy's got like an 8-pack, hugely muscular. And he's 66 years old. And I look at my dad, right? And my dad's about 64, 65, if I'm not mistaken. And physically, I have seen him degenerate massively over the last 10 years or so. He went from being, you know, like an old dude to a proper old dude, you know, like his joints are giving him issues. He's out of shape. Like, and he's not a slob. You know, my dad exercises and he tries to eat well. I've just seen these massive changes go through his body, all due to aging and due to the fact it's his endocrine, his hormones have changed. His endocrine profile has changed. And I just think to myself, like, my dad could look like Sylvester Stallone, you know, like he could look like that and probably feel a whole lot better if he had access to these medicines. And I just think for me, the thing that keeps me from doing as much jiu-jitsu as I would like to do is recovery. I can't train like 6 times anymore a week. I just can't. My body just does like, it just doesn't like it anymore. It's just like, nah, dude. And then I start feeling exhausted and things start like popping out and clicking. And I often think to myself, you know, maybe the correct course of action is to get on some TRT or some growth hormone. But it's been my experience that the few times I have dabbled with those things, they've come with a price. I remember growth hormone just kind of made me feel weird, and I could see that my face was starting to change shape a little bit, and the testosterone as well. Like, I remember I took something called HCG, human chorionic gonadotropin, which is the thing that's supposed to balance you out, like, and kickstart your own production of testosterone after a cycle. And dude, I always tell people, like, I know what it feels like to be a premenstrual woman, because there was a point where I was just like, oh my fuck, I'm not myself. I don't know what's happening to me. Like, I was just irritable and anxious and scared and nervous and just as far from being a calm, like, masculine, self-assured man as I could possibly be. And I know it was the stuff that I just injected into me. So I know that two sides to this coin. I just think it's something that we don't discuss enough in the jiu-jitsu community, and we don't, I think it just needs, yeah, it needs to be discussed more. And I think we need to hear more from people like yourself who've been brave enough to try these things and get the help that they need. And I think you're really a good advertisement for it. In fact, I often, when I spoke to another buddy the other day, I just said to him, yeah, man, I've got this buddy in Tucson, and man, the guy's the same age as me, and he's in great shape, and he's able to train consistently, and I'm thinking about going down the same road. So I really do appreciate your honesty sharing that, Dave.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, honestly, just touching on what you were talking about, you know, some of the negative potential aspects that you experienced personally, and I don't know, you know, I have no idea the dosages that you were on or what you were taking in conjunction with it or any of that stuff, but I often tell people that, you know, one, my suggestion when it comes to the topic of TRT first and foremost is truly don't take it if you don't need it. And I really do mean and believe that. You know, if you find a good reputable place that you go in and you actually get your testosterone levels checked and they are, you know, you're operating at a good, efficient, normal level, there's no need to potentially cause a negative side effect when you truly don't need it. I mean, you know, it's like I wouldn't take pain medication if I'm not in pain because the trade-off is horrific, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and that I think that goes in line too. Now, one step further is what are your goals with TR-treat? You know, and I know that there's a lot of topics out there that, you know, they talk about cycling and making sure that you cycle off and, you know, cycle off twice as long as you cycle on. And, you know, I think that, again, we're talking about perhaps different types of people here. You know, you're talking about a category of people that don't truly need TRT that are taking it to get that extra edge above and beyond, you know, where they should be operating at a normal level, right? And then you're talking about a group of people that need it. And so the concept, in truth, of cycling off of TRT, again, when you're someone that needs it and you're taking a regulated, you know, a moderate dosage that just gets your body to an optimal level, right? So the concept of cycling off of that, it doesn't really make sense to me. Now, I get that, dude, even saying that, I get that I'm probably going to get, oh, how could you say that? How could you tell people not to cycle off of testosterone? Well, if you're taking 2 or 3 times a recommended dosage for a patient that needs testosterone replacement therapy, so you're trying to really elevate your testosterone levels into the thousands and plus, then yeah, long-term effects are going to be pretty rotten. And you're totally going to have issues with testosterone production, natural testosterone production. Right now, if you're somebody that needs a medicine because your body can't physically generate enough of that testosterone for you, then why would I want to go off of that? Like, coming off of it would not necessarily do anything other than make me bottom out, which sounds like what happened to you, you know, and studies on HCG are nowhere near as concrete as testosterone in terms of what it will actually do for you.
Yeah. And I think what the caveat I should have mentioned before we started this particular part of the conversation is that neither you or I are medical professionals, and that if you're even considering doing this, don't even think about it until you've gone and consulted the appropriate medical professional. It's not something you can just wing it, you know. you know, Dave, like this conversation, I know it's bouncing around to all different topics, but I made a little map here of the things I wanted to chat to you about, the things about you that I found interesting. And the next one is that I remember I trained with you at Undisputed a couple of times, and we had just finished training, and I think we were going out for lunch, and we were going to go in your car. So I get in your car, and like, I mean, there's literally, like, from what I can remember, there were like guns all over the place. There was like, you had a gun on your leg, and then you had a gun on your holster and on your hip, and then there was like one in the secret little compartment in your car, and then there was a knife underneath the sun visor. And I was just like, god damn, this guy's prepared. And we started a conversation then. I just wanted to know why you carried all those guns, and you told me, but I just like you to share with the listeners. I remember what I said to you is that my experience is, or my belief is, that if you carry this kind of thing, if you carry a gun or a knife, then you automatically, on some kind of level, you enter into that game, the game of guns and knives, or you start playing on the same field as the guys who are playing on the field of guns and knives. And so it sounds a little bit out there and it's a little bit woo-woo, but it's kind of like you attract that energy into your vicinity. And I remember you gave me a pretty good counter argument or a counterpoint, but unfortunately, I can't remember exactly what it was. Would you mind sharing with me your thoughts on why you do?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because full disclosure is that my feeling and my view on this has actually shifted a little bit. I wouldn't say that I'm fully in line perhaps with your thought process, but it has shifted a little bit from how I felt a couple years ago. I think it was in part just me being a little bit more honest with myself. And so I'm really kind of facing that false sense of reality and false sense of security that I perhaps had with carrying those guns. You know, I think when I was younger, right, and going back to that not having two pennies to rub together kind of feeling, I think one of my major motivating factors to really building something here to provide financial stability for me and my family and in truth, my coworkers and staff, one of my big motivating factors is that I never wanted to go back to living in my buddy's utility closet, you know, that was big enough for a single bed, you know, that cost me $50 a month. And so I think when I finally got to a point where I had some assets and I had some things that had monetary value to them, that I immediately became a little bit paranoid and, you know, just a little more consumed than perhaps I would have normally been with protecting those things. And so my thought process was, let me get something that I know, regardless of what happens, you know, something that my jiu-jitsu can't help me with or whatever it might be. You know, a gun would help me with this situation and I can protect the people I love and the things that I have. And so that was my thought process, right? Since then, and admittedly so, I would say that I wasn't informed enough about proper gun usage. I knew the basics in terms of gun safety. So, you know, just the things, making sure that they're in places where people can't get to them easily, that might hurt themselves accidentally. You know, you're always practicing good general gun safety.
But you didn't know how to shoot out the window during a drive-by with one hand.
Right? I mean, honestly, the more I started actually working with people that cared about me, that are in, you know, military law enforcement, that spend, you know, their lives are knowing how to use those things and use them effectively, the more I started to get a realistic picture of what that scenario would really look like. And it's funny, it's like, I always say that people that don't do jiu-jitsu and, you know, don't do, you know, mixed martial arts in general or something like that, that they usually at times have a very unrealistic sense of self-confidence or in their ability to fight. You know, people picture what they would do in a fight without ever having actually been in a situation where somebody is trying to hurt them, whether, you know, in a training atmosphere where they're not trying to get hurt, but they're trying to choke them, whatever. You know, I think jiu-jitsu has taught me how difficult it is. Like, man, when I get somebody from the University of Arizona that's a Division I collegiate athlete, like a football player, and they're 300 pounds and not an ounce of fat on them, and they have no idea what jiu-jitsu is, I don't care who you are, but I'm 155 pounds, right? If you can tell me that submitting them easily and at will when they're really trying to come at you hard, if you think that's easy, then your jiu-jitsu might be on a far different plane than mine. Now, can I ultimately submit them? Yeah, of course, but man, it sucks and it's hard work, right? And so now let's take that same premise and we'll apply it to the gun ownership from a self-defense standpoint, right? Man, without that repetitive training of being able to access your weapon and access it in an extreme stress environment and being able to use it effectively, then I firmly believe that you will do more harm than good by owning a gun.
Wow, that's a powerful statement.
Yeah, and I really do believe that, you know, wholeheartedly. And so, you know, it's one thing, you know, I tell people now that sure, there is a small element of self-defense when it comes to a gun, but usually I think about that in truth inside of my own home with a locked door where time might be a little bit more on my side, hopefully, right? Mm-hmm. But when it comes to guns and gun ownership now, for the most part, honestly, the flag that I tell is that I just like them. They're just fun. It's fun for me to be able to go to the range and shoot a little bit. I think it's fun. And, you know, keeping that mentality in mind and practicing good gun ownership, you know, that they're in places where people can't easily access them and hurt themselves, you know, then at least I feel as though I'm a little bit more realistic with myself.
Fair enough, man. I appreciate you being so honest about that. I really do. So let's stick with this honesty motif. And the final topic I wanted to discuss with you. I remember you and I were sitting on the mat once, and I can't remember how we got to it, but you said to me that you really felt that there was a growing sentiment or growing kind of a backlash against the, I don't know how to define them, but there's kind of like a group of Brazilians who had arrived in the US and basically felt that they owned jiu-jitsu. And you felt that there was a kind of tide that was turning against that. And I just wanted to explore that a little bit because I find that quite an interesting topic. Could you share any thoughts you might have on that with me?
Sure. And, you know, I'm not sure. In truth, I kind of vaguely remember the conversation a little bit, but to kind of clarify at least how I feel. So, you know, I, first and foremost, unbelievably thankful that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu made it to America, and so thankful because it's in part helped make me who and what I am today, and I respect and love that. I think the thing that often gets discussed a lot right now is just the, for me at least, the topic consistently of Jiu-Jitsu for self-defense versus sport Jiu-Jitsu, and sometimes the polar opposing viewpoints on that as one thing, and then, you know, I've heard at least in passing some mention of that jiu-jitsu is, you know, it's losing its efficacy and that it's losing its true meaning as a result of a lot of the American application or practitioners. And so with all that said, right, you know, I think that in large part because of its growth and namely its growth, you know, here in America, that a lot of American jiu-jitsu practitioners are starting to feel a lot more confident and self-confident about stepping up and saying, you know, okay, well, maybe I don't want to adhere to this exact set of rules or guidelines when it comes to just, for example, you know, classroom structure or format, or, you know, whether it be a quote-unquote old school mentality of calling somebody professor or doing this or doing that. And, you know, when I think that sometimes at times people like me that don't necessarily like that, you know, don't want to be called professor and don't, you know, don't necessarily adhere to some of those stringent older historical aspects of this Brazilian jiu-jitsu, that I think a lot of folks are starting to kind of embrace that. You know, one of the big topics, of course, is cross training, you know. I think in the past, I had met a lot of old school kind of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instructors that were really opposed to the notion of cross-training. And, you know, I'm not sure why their motivation was such. I mean, perhaps they had reasons back then. But, you know, I'm much more of the mentality that, in truth, when it comes to my quote-unquote students, that, you know, they're not my possession at all, really. In fact, in truth, you know, I work for them. You know, they're my employer, so to speak. And so while I can appreciate that you can't have somebody causing destructive behavior in your group, and whether that is jiu-jitsu or any other business you operate, you know, I wouldn't want that. But that said, I mean, who am I to tell somebody that they're not allowed to go some other place and pay for another service, you know, in conjunction with mine or what have you, because it's what they want. You know what I mean?
No, I completely understand. And I guess for me, when I started to frame this part of the conversation, I used the word Brazilians, but it's not necessarily Brazilians. It's everyone who has that mentality. I mean, there's a lot of cool Brazilians who are progressive and just awesome, awesome instructors, and they care about their students. It's just that weird mentality of, I've always found it kind of weird that it's okay, you can't go train with him because you might give him our secrets. It's like, come on, dude, like this stuff is all freely available anyway. Like, and so what if he gives some of your secrets, he's going to bring back some other secrets for you. It's like, It's a very insular and what I believe to be very unhealthy way to go through life. I mean, obviously, there are certain boundaries that we all operate within. You train at a specific academy and like you might compete for them. And I get that. I really do. I get that. And you sweat and bleed with these guys and you're going, it's almost like going to war in a kind of way. But that's the special thing about jiu-jitsu is you can go to war. And then next week you can go train with that dude. You know, it's not like that's the special thing about it. And let's not fuck that up by getting some weird tribal bullshit, like erroneous software in our brains.
Exactly. And that's the thing, you know, that I always try to stress that, you know, my thoughts and feelings on this particular subject really have nothing to do with whatever nationality somebody has to be from, whether they're from Brazil or from America or whatever it is. I mean, I've met a lot of, you know, I call BJJ fanatics, instructors that are American, and man, they push the Kool-Aid drinking more than anybody I've met from Brazil. So, you know, I think it just has in large part with how you were brought up in jiu-jitsu. But I love the route that jiu-jitsu is taking now, you know, and I love that as a result of a lot of places, I think that in anything else, like anything else in business life, you either adapt, right, and you change so that you can grow with whatever direction that thing is taking, or you dig your feet in because you really do believe that you're doing something that is right, and so you hold your guns, and sometimes the one works and sometimes the other doesn't, but I'm glad to see that a lot of those folks that had that mentality are now really starting to kind of shift their focus and their view on.
Yeah, that's, I totally agree with you, Dave, and you put that very well. My brother, I'm so grateful to be able to have that conversation with you. And I'm also grateful for all the time we spent together and you being such a gracious host when I was out in Tucson. You always let me come and train there. And I just really felt it was a home away from home for me. And I look forward to seeing you again and to training with you and the guys again. And if people want to, if they're passing through the area and they want to train and check out your facility, where should they go online to find out more information?
Absolutely. So UndisputedAZ, as in Arizona.com. So UndisputedAZ.com. And I'll just real quick too, thank you so much for having me on here. You know, the times when you've been out here, we've had a chance to chat here and chat over the phone, whatever it might be. I always love it, totally value it. And love, man, that you are somebody that, in all honesty, as an entrepreneur, you could be using your skill set and applying it to things not inside of the jiu-jitsu world because you recognize it might be more lucrative, whatever it might be, but you're choosing to build something inside the jiu-jitsu community, and as a result, the jiu-jitsu community is growing in general. And I really appreciate and admire and respect that.
Oh, dude, that's put a big smile on my face. Thank you for that, Dave. Thank you so much. My brother, 1,000 blessings on you and all your students. Until next time.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Now, as far as I'm concerned, that right there is an example of a quality human being. You know, one of the things that I've been focused on in my life, specifically in the last year or so, is to surround myself with positive people and people that pull me up. Whenever I'm around someone and I feel that after spending some time with them, my energy is depleted, or I feel less enthusiastic, or I feel that I'm just kind of like on a low level, on a low vibration after being around them, I've been really making an effort to not necessarily cut them out of my life, but reduce the amount of time I spend with them. And instead, I'm trying to spend as much time as possible with people like David Riley. And to me, it's such a privilege and a blessing that I can speak to people like this each week and then get them to share their insight about the world and jiu-jitsu with you guys. I specifically enjoyed how honest he was about sharing his experiences with TRT, because that's something, as an older jiu-jitsu player, it's something I think about all the time, you know, and I don't just want to take a black or white mindset or view of it. I don't want to just say it's all bad or it's all good. I want to find out, like, if there's this thing that could help me live a better life and help me do more jiu-jitsu, I want to know more about it, the good and the bad. And I really respect the way he just came out and said, yeah, this is what it's done for me and I use it. And that's really, really cool. So thanks to David for coming on the show. Guys, remember, we do have costs running the show, and by visiting our sponsors, you can help us with those and help keep the show going. First sponsor is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood store. Just head on over to store.jiu-jitsu-brotherhood.com and you can pick up any one of our fantastic gis, rash guards, t-shirts, hoodies, patches, stickers, instructional materials. And just because you're one of our awesome listeners, you get 10% off when you use the code podcast at checkout. And also something that I really wish I was in the state at the moment to take advantage of is ButcherBox. For all our US listeners, if you want to be as healthy as possible and you are a meat eater, I strongly suggest, even if you don't use ButcherBox, that you eat organic, free-range, grass-fed meat. And that's what ButcherBox offers. They deliver to your door the best beef, chicken, and pork. And this is, again, I always say it, it's something that's very close to my heart. I wish we didn't have to eat animals to be healthy. But from my current perspective, it seems to me that, at least for me personally, everyone's different. I need quality animal products for my body to function as well as it should. And the thing is, I know that the way animals are treated in the factory farming system, I know it's wrong. It's just, there's no excuse for it. And things like ButcherBox help. It allows us to get quality animal products from humane sources. So check out butcherbox.com. And if you use the code JJB15, you'll get not only $15 off your first order, you'll get free organically cured bacon, which is awesome. I haven't actually tried the stuff, but I had it sent to my fiance in the US, and her family had it for a couple of barbecues, and they really loved it. And I'm super excited to get to the States at the end of the year, and I'm going to start using ButcherBox full time. So until then, guys, thanks for listening to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood podcast. Tune in next week for another cool episode.